Hi, this is Ryan Dawson of the ANC Report. Today's guest is Bill Conroy of Narco News. He's an investigative journalist. Welcome to the show, sir.
How you doing, Ryan?
I'm good. You've been covering corrupt law enforcement for about a dozen years, is that correct?
Yeah, it's been a bit of a trek.
Well,
since the 90s.
Well, recently an older story you wrote about the CIA looking the other way and allowing a drug cartel in Mexico to operate freely, supposedly in exchange for info on rival cartels, is getting some attention again. Let's talk about that a bit first. What was going on down there?
Well, first of all, it's like the story with that is it was really the a DEA informant that was working inside the Sinaloa cartel. Basically, he was a lawyer for the Chapo Guzman and Zambada, the guys that ran the cartel. And they knew he was an informant, and the U.S. government, you know, knew who the lawyer was, and they were negotiating through this lawyer. And it depends which version of the story you believe, but the version that the Sinaloa organization, vis-a-vis one of the guys they arrested who's on trial where this all came out, a guy named Zambada Nibla, who's the son of one of the leaders of the Sinaloa organization, essentially argues they had a quid pro quo agreement with the U.S. government whereby the Sinaloa organization would provide information on their rival cartels in exchange for immunity for them to smuggle drugs into the U.S. and set up arms deals, etc. In the U.S. government, where this is being tried, the prosecutors, of course, say, well, that's not true. And then they invoked something called SIPA, which essentially is national security. They classify everything in the trial and are allowed to keep away certain evidence from the defense if the judge agrees that it's not, that crucial, this trial, and it implicates national security. And that's where the CIA angle comes into it is at the level they were dealing, and anytime you're dealing overseas, DEA deals overseas, FBI does, I guess ICE does now to a certain extent. But in any case, the CIA is always present. They're kind of that's their domain. They're the king of law enforcement. Well, they're not law enforcement. They're the king of federal bureaucracy, U.S. bureaucracy overseas. Mm-hmm. The State Department's their public face, and CIA, of course, is clandestine for the most part. The suspicion is, and of course, because it's classified or it's put under this thing called SIPA, you can't see the testimony, but the suspicion is that in addition to DEA, CIA would have been playing a role with this informant, and, you know, working behind the scenes to essentially get intelligence, on the narco-trafficking organizations in Mexico, and, you know, potentially in exchange, cutting deals or allowing certain things to go by the wayside when it came to criminal violations of the Sinaloa cartel. That, I guess, all broke in a Mexican paper, the turn of, January, was it this year, something like that? We were writing about this back in 2011. This was all coming out in this guy's trials in Chicago. I hope that makes sense. It's complicated, but essentially, it's a simple scenario of you've got the U.S. government, you've got the alleged criminal organizations or mafia organizations in Mexico, and the deal is that there was a guy in the middle of all of that who was able to travel freely between U.S. law enforcement and the mafia organizations and exchange information and deals, make deals on behalf of each that were in the best interest of each. There's no way, there is just absolutely no way in that world that an informant would be allowed to live. The Sinaloa cartel would not have allowed this lawyer to live if they weren't getting something out of the deal. The problem is, in a court of law, especially when you implicate national security, you got to prove it. And that's where the rubber meets the road. And there's clever ways of making deals that, you can never prove happened. I think that's what you're dealing with in that case.
Well, even if you can, they can classify everything. And it's a pretty tight question to say, well, who's less trustworthy, a Sinaloa cartel member or the government? Because it's pretty
Yeah,
even.
well, it's been put out that way. Yeah, each trying to question the credibility of the other.
But it's plausible. It wouldn't be the first time the CIA or any of the three-letter organizations have been caught running drugs or guns or working with mafias.
Yeah, I mean it's plausible. I mean, another case I covered, the informant that worked for the government was actually involved in murdering people, and the government knew about it, but because they wanted to make a case, they allowed him to continue murdering people. This was in Mexico.
Well, I'm just shocked that the government would murder people.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the danger people, at least from my point of view, run into is when they kind of create these grand conspiracy theories and try to make everything connected. And the reality, and if you just look at your own life, I mean, how much control does anyone have over life? There's certain levels of corruption, and certainly there are conspiracies. There's laws against
Sure, but it's a lot more sloppy usually, and people, they kind of have
it's
a
supposed.
bias for elegance, and they want everything to have a nice pyramid structure or what have you, and some people have no filter, and it's kind of sad because, like you said, so there are conspiracies, but there are some camps that think everything's a conspiracy too, and both are extreme to completely
Right.
reject them all or accept them all.
Right. And this is just people's motivations. I mean, the U.S. government bureaucracy and the drug war is set up. People get rewarded for making cases, for arresting people, for putting people in jail, for recovering money. So that's what motivates them. And if they can, cut a deal with one group to make a bigger arrest or get, more, take down more drugs, they'll do that because they'll get a bigger budget and a bigger career boost out of it. You see what I mean? It's not like they really
Yeah.
want to run drugs. They just get rewarded for the wrong things. So
Well, the
it's how
system
it
is set up so that they're motivated to behave that way. Nobody on the top has to direct it all. I mean, they're working in their own interests. I get a bigger
Yeah.
bus, we get a larger budget next year. And, you see that in a lot of systems.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, human systems are very imperfect, and when the stakes get really high, that's when you see, the terrible fallout from the drug war is that, it's not like a traffic cop. I mean, people are dying, and countries are getting really messed up. I mean, the stakes are just incredibly high. So,
Plus, there's no real accountability, it seems like, when they are caught, when the CIA is caught in Iran-Contra, for example. Most of those guys got pardoned and nothing really happened.
that's been a problem. And there is a to this day a rivalry between law enforcement and the intelligence agencies, in the sense that there's no love lost at times because of the perception that the intelligence agencies, pretty much have free rein and are never held accountable, for their actions. And of course, if you talk to folks in the intelligence world, you'll get another, point of view on that. I try to stay out of that. It's not really a solvable, nor is it something I think is really my turf. But it is a factor in how things play out. One side doesn't trust the other, and there's a lot of dis. I guess what I'm saying is there's a lot of dysfunction between and within these agencies, and regardless of what the politicians and the public information officers will tell you, a lot of it is just, people, protecting their turf and not really necessarily looking out for the larger interests that these agencies were set up to look out for, which is supposedly the interests of, the citizens. That's probably the last calculation that's made
I think
sometimes.
so. There's a lot of incompetence too, and then to save face, they classify things. That's another reason they can do it. The CIA is infamous for its Air America opium adventures, but earlier this week you wrote an update on the Mayan Jaguar scandal confirming that there were CIA connected cocaine planes shipping drugs from Latin America to Europe through Africa. What is the Mayan Jaguar operation, and how did they get caught with Skyway and Donna Blue?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating story, and it's a one of an example of
I mean, this is movie worthy. I mean, this is amazing.
Well, I mean, it's also something I started covering and there were a few of us that were covering it back. 2007 is when this story started, and it's an example why you really have to stay on these stories long term, because they don't unravel easily. And essentially, this all started over a corporate jet, a Gulfstream that crashed in Mexico's Yucatan in late September 2007 with like 3.7 tons of cocaine on board. And the jet, that particular jet, had a tail number that was, you know, traced, because they were looking into the rendition flights at the same time. You know, before that, they had done a lot of paperwork looking into the rendition flights, both in Europe and, you know, some U.S. journalists and so forth.
Let me just point out what that is. Rendition is when they take prisoners to a country where it's legal to torture them.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I mean, basically, in this case, they were, abducting people from the Middle East and Europe, wherever they, you know, Afghanistan, and flying them to Guantanamo Bay under the, you know, the terrorism laws that were enacted after, you know, 9/11. And, you know, from there, you know, they got stuck. But essentially, they were using private contract jets to fly these people there. And it was all black budget stuff, and it was all under the radar. And so they would, you know, lease these jets. And this particular jet that crashed with the cocaine on board in 2007, in the years roughly 2001 through 2004, was showing up in European airports in Guantanamo Bay, and essentially was linked to the transport of rendition prisoners to Guantanamo Bay. So it was being used by the CIA. That alone, again, doesn't prove anything. All right. I mean, it's interesting. But what gets more interesting with this story is that the plane that when this Gulfstream crashed, it had just been sold to two individuals, one of whom, it turns out from Narco News investigation, was actually a government pilot that had done, work for covert missions flying into Colombia for joint FBI, DEA, and what we could tell, CIA operations. So this jet was owned. It was a bill of sale with this guy's name on it when it crashed with the cocaine on board. The company that sold, this is what came out new, the company that sold the jet to this government pilot itself was a government front company. And that came out in court pleadings. It was supposedly an ICE, Immigration Customs Enforcement, front. For
is that Devin Holding?
That was Donna Blue.
Oh, Donna Blue. Well, there's right. another shell later.
Now, Devin Holding goes back a ways. That's part of the rendition stuff. But another plane.
That's a Carolina.
There's three. This is why it takes so long. There's three companies that have popped up: Skyway Aircraft, Donna Blue, and World Jet. Mm-hmm. All of which are interconnected, and that's what the last story that we did spells out, all the interconnections. Donna Blue, the guy running Donna Blue, was a U.S. government informant, and the company was a government front. That's proven in court records.
That's out of Florida?
Donna. They're all out of Florida. All three of them are out of Florida. Mm-hmm. World Jet, is under – they were actually raided by DEA. The guy that run the people that run World Jet – had sold a bunch of these planes. They were all plane brokers. They would actually sell planes, and they've been accused of selling them to drug smugglers and then, you know, doing a markup on them, making money on the side. But all these, you know, dozens of planes got sold by these three companies. Many of them went into Venezuela, sold to Venezuelan individuals with connections to narco traffickers. And then we were able to trace a subset of those planes, at least a half dozen, that ended up in Africa, which is a major transshipment point for cocaine and arms, but cocaine into Europe. Companies through various connections were connected back to government operations and or, in some cases, the CIA or ICE, which is Department of Homeland Security, in digging a little deeper on that. This wasn't, in no way, shape, or form did this resemble a law enforcement operation. So the law enforcement sources we talked to, at least one on the record said it looked like they were using ICE as a cover. And that happens. In other words, somebody who works for CIA will be in an embassy, stationed in an embassy with a diplomatic passport that, you know, identifies them as, you know, whatever, an ICE agent. In this case, it appears it was ICE was a convenient, cover for CIA operations, at least in the opinion of several law enforcement officers we talked to. Now, why this was going on, I've actually been in a discussion with that with a number of people. I mean, we've been able to trace the fact that these companies are connected, that they, there's a lot of cocaine moving. It was moving sometimes up from Colombia into Venezuela, but at any rate, a lot of the planes were ending up in Venezuela. Initially, we thought it was some kind of op directed at Venezuela, but that doesn't, that appears to be more of a misdirection than anything, because then that was the next connection made, is that a number of these planes were then ending up in Africa, flying, in some cases, flying tons of cocaine into Africa. That's where the story's at right now. The DEA is investigating, the Office of Inspector General is investigating this operation. All this came under the map or the rubicon of Mayan Jaguar. That's what they called this operation. It was supposedly an ICE undercover operation targeting drug traffickers, and they would place transponders on these planes that they sold to the drug smugglers. Problem is, there were no arrests made in a 4-year period, no indictments in the United States. And most of the planes are unaccounted for. The only ones we know about are the ones that either crashed with cocaine on board or were somehow apprehended in foreign countries. Like in Venezuela, they did apprehend some of these jets. The government in Venezuela did apprehend some of these jets, one in the process of putting a couple tons of cocaine on board that was destined for Africa.
Tons.
What's this mean? I mean, I would... That's what we're taught. That's the next thing. I mean, obviously there's money to be made in doing this. There's obviously we did find some information we include in the story about why Africa would be, in the post 9/11 world, be a high value target for intelligence operations. Clearly, we've covered stories in the past, an FBI agent who was sent into China. His mission.
Do you know where in Africa the entry points are?
Sierra. There were at this point Western Africa. I think Sierra Leone came up. There was. I don't know that, because of the court pleadings didn't specify where in Africa. South Africa was another point where there were three planes sold to a company out of South Africa that was under investigation for arms trafficking and drug smuggling. It was Congo Mining Services, something to that effect. Mm-hmm. So, we don't have the specifics. And mind you, there were over 4 years, there were dozens of planes that were brokered. Some of them didn't. It wasn't that all of them went in Africa. Some of them were used and ended up back in Central America. Drugs were loaded, in picked up in Venezuela at any rate, or possibly in Colombia, and then they were flown up to Honduras and undoubtedly some into Mexico. That's where the one that crashed in the Yucatan was en route from Colombia up into the Mexico when it crashed. Undoubtedly, that plane would have been offloaded before the border, probably for the drugs destined for the United States. We did. If you go back to our series of 2007, we were told that there was another CIA operative who was setting the deals up in Colombia, the cocaine deals. They're all syndicated, so they would get a bunch of investors to invest in these, because they're putting on millions of dollars of cocaine. It isn't like one guy does it, so they get some people together and they, as investors, and then the idea was they would fly this cocaine up, monitor it, and then when they landed in the United States, somehow mysteriously arrest them. Well, that never happened, Where did the cocaine go? This keeps repeating itself in history. There was in the early 90s, a similar operation was run out of
a sting is an excellent cover for trafficking drugs, because you can say all the way, oh, we're just following them up to the boss or whatever, and then just never have the sting at the end. And
yeah, but except that's the problem. That's the line they sell the media. that's called a controlled delivery, and none of this fits the parameters of a controlled delivery. For one, you'd have to alert all the countries involved in their law enforcement for it to be controlled. Every step of the way, you would have to have the drugs monitored directly, either by assets on board the planes as well as tracking devices. You would have to have people on the ground. In other words, there would never be a moment where there'd be any possibility that these drugs would ever be able to be, you know, freed up into the into the market. This operation didn't work like that. This operation was like, you know, load the drugs and goodbye. Hope we catch you at the border. You know, it was not in any shape or form. Anyone I talked to in law enforcement, could this ever be passed off? It's like Fast and Furious. It's like, you know, what the hell was going on there? I mean, that idea is, we'll let the guns go across the border and we'll find them later.
After they cross the border, they have no jurisdiction to track them.
Exactly. So well, that's essentially, this is that in reverse. We'll let
Just unbelievable incompetence or just a really horrible cover story?
I don't think.
I mean, I know that's speculation. I mean, who knows? But I mean, how can they be that stupid to say, we're going to track these guns, but after they go across this line, we have no ability to track them?
Well, Ryan, I started to give you another example. Sometimes history helps. And I think the reason this stuff keeps happening is people don't know history, or the media doesn't cover it, so it never makes it into the history books. So, you know, I'm not a young guy anymore. I remember the 80s. I was alive when Iran-Contra was happening. I mean, I was covering that stuff back then. But if you're a 20-year-old journalist today, that's history to you, right? And if it's not in the history books and it wasn't covered very well, where do you find this stuff out? It's like you got to rediscover it. Every generation does. In this case, in the early 90s, it was a similar operation. They were flying tons of cocaine into the States. It was a CIA operation using a CIA asset. It was a National Guard of Venezuela. And the CIA asked DEA if they could do it. DEA said no. They did it anyway. And the whole reason the CIA was doing it, allegedly, at least they blamed it on a couple, like a station chief in Venezuela. I suspect it was bigger than that. Their whole goal was, well, we want to let a lot of these drugs into the country so we can put our assets inside this organization and they'll trust us because they'll see we couldn't be government if we're letting all these drugs go in. So this is why we're doing it. We're trying to convince them of our credibility as criminals. And then we're going to, you know, penetrate their organization. We're going to be able to flip assets, meaning a lot of the people in the drug organizations happen to be powerful politicians in other countries, right? Mm-hmm. So this goes back to another guy I covered, an FBI agent who was sent into China. This is all documented to spy on China. His goal, his mission for the FBI with cooperation of the CIA was to penetrate Chinese intelligence. The way he went in was through Chicago, through the triads, through the gangs. He went in through the criminal organizations because once he convinced them he was a criminal, he got access to the highest level people in Chinese intelligence. And along the way, he was able to either blackmail or otherwise flip members of the Chinese intelligence community to become double agents for the United States. That's the game. And that's the game the CIA plays. They could care less if the drugs get through. Right?
Do you think they were letting the guns go through to up their street cred so they could penetrate better?
That is a typical CIA operation. They're interested in intelligence and information and penetrating organizations. The guns and drugs are a byproduct of that. They don't care. That's pretty much what I've seen and pretty much the way it's been presented to me. I don't think they purposely necessarily go out to put drugs on the street or guns in the street, but I think they consider it an acceptable price for the right intelligence, right? And then the question becomes, you know, who's dreaming these operations up and who's determining what our intelligence objectives are and who's going in after the fact to determine whether they were actually met or whether just a bunch of people got rich off this scheme and passed it off as a critical national intelligence operation.
Well, that's these another question too, is how much control do they really have over all these assets?
Because exactly.
Low-level guys, the lower management can easily say, well, I can make some personal profit just selling this or that, so exactly. Why wouldn't they?
Exactly. There's that element of it too. So it's a very complex world that has been going on since Roman times, unfortunately, probably before. And, you know, once you get a glimpse into that world, it's, you know, at least from my point of view, it's a very complicated scenario to solve. I don't know the solution to it, but it's going on. And I think, from my point of view as a journalist, I just think it would be better if more people understood that's how it worked. You know, whether it's good or bad or indifferent, that's up to everyone to decide. But, you know, living the lie of the drug war is that we don't know the truth, right? And I think that's the big objective here. To the extent, you know, without being foolish, where you cost people their lives, I mean, that's not my interest. I don't play God that way. But I think on some of these things, like mine and Jaguar, you know, I mean, maybe we're 75-80% on the way to explaining or at least illuminating what's going on there. I think that matters. I mean, I think people should be asking questions about that operation, and I think we should know, you know, to the extent we can, whether it was, you know, needlessly putting drugs on the street. And you know, if that's the case, and we don't have policies in place, if we're throwing people in jail for it, and the government's responsible for putting the drugs there in the first place, then we've got, you know, some explaining to do, right? We got a hypocritical system that needs some adjusting. Those are the kind of larger policy questions I think that are important. Whether we're going to stop the intelligence world from operating as it does, or we're going to stop mafias from existing, I mean, that's a whole other issue.
Well,
You know what I'm saying?
I mean, if you could solve that, you'd get a prize for sure, but
Yeah, right. And I don't, you know, I don't think that it's going to happen, but I do think we can have better policies, and I do think we can have, I guess, as they would say, a more perfect union, if they will, if you want to use that terminology. I don't, you know, if you want to be global about it, at least a better.
well, shining some light on it's got to be the first step. You have to at least know
Exactly.
what's going on. And I
Right.
think we should take maybe a more philosophical, serious look at, should we be putting people in cages for victimizing themselves, or should we be treating more individuals
Exactly.
and looking at the punishments for drugs and if that's actually doing more harm than good? And again, you have a profit motive for private prison systems as well.
Right. And I, you know, those are the kind of things I think as citizens we can and should be discussing and solving those kind of problems and policy issues. The stories about the nitty-gritty underworld of how this drug war happens are, you know, I guess something for the history book. I'm pretty, I guess, unoptimistic about solving, you know, some of the larger problems that are part of the human condition in terms of just the greed and the avarice and the you know, just the you know, I don't know what you want to call it when you got 50-60,000 people murdered in Mexico over, you know, over a drug war, and most of those people had nothing to do with the drug war. I mean, that kind of thing is just sad, you know. And I would love to see it end. And to the extent that, you know, illuminating the drug war and what it's really about can take us a step in that direction, I think it's important that we all contribute to that.
Well, I think a lot of it's because there hasn't been a lot of accountability or coverage, but that's, you know, in large part, you know, all through the 80s, the internet was nil, so they could get away with a lot more. I mean, narco news and independent journalists can shine light on these stories, and everybody, you know, pick a piece. And it's a long process, but I think as the internet grows and as journalism grows online, and you have more independent sources that are free to write about whatever they want to write about, you know, news is news, that there will be more accountability, because a lot of these stories probably would have just sat in certain nerdy circles and never really had any prominence were it not for the web.
Yeah. Well, I also hope, and I guess we're kind of off topic, but I also hope the web's like a giant library to me. And it's amazing where it's at now compared to like when I first started covering this stuff back in the late 90s, when the internet was, you know, not anything like it is now. And I used a lot more paper and had to go down to the courthouse a lot more. The point being is, you know, my kids are going to be able to find all this information is going to be archived. It's going to be part of the historic record. And that's important. That's important that we do that.
Yeah, also a lot of this written news is hitting new mediums, so you'll have more radio, video, etc., that kind of serves as the a foothold to get someone interested, and then they go in and start reading about it. Because a lot of people might be interested in these things and they don't even know it's there. You have to have something to catch their attention first, and then they can go and start digging into it and learn more about it. And I'm hoping that, because it seems hopeless when you look at the CIA and the mafias and the drug wars, it's been going on for centuries, as you said, but the internet hasn't. And I think that's a very important factor in trying to turn a lot of these things around. They seem to be a little bit more politically conscious now than in the past, where it was very much in the dark.
Right. People, can make their own media now, which, means whether it's, movements or people that are, organizing around issues, they can make their own media to help advance those movements in that organization. And that's where change comes from. Change doesn't come from the top, it comes from the bottom up. And that's the hope, I think.
Yeah, we've seen that a lot with the exposure for financial scandals and a lot of things that in the past really had no attention, and at least now it's on the radar. So I'm hoping, and if that continues to grow, that we can fix some of these things. But this story with Mayan Jaguar, I really encourage people to go to Narco News and read that whole article, because that's just fascinating stuff, and that's a really long investigation. And I'm hoping, it says there's still ongoing investigations with the DEA and some of these African connections and the people selling planes. And so I'm hoping this story will continue to unravel and have more developments. And if it does, I definitely want to have you back on to help explain this very convoluted and complex subject.
Yeah, we'd be happy to, and everybody can have a piece of it. Planes are easy to track. You just need their tail number and their serial number. And if they pop up in your neck of the woods, make a note of it and see where they were before, and you start to connect the dots.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, we should say, after Africa, the ultimate destination seems to be Europe as well. They're spreading drugs there too. I guess the cocaine.
Well, that is the may there's a statistic in there, and without having the story up right in front of me, but it's like 2/3 of the drugs entering Europe come through Africa. So Africa, particularly Western Africa, is like Mexico is to the United States in terms of most of the drugs entering the United States, come through Mexico now, and Africa plays that role for Europe.
Yeah, or Turkey for heroin. It's sort of the
Yeah.
gateway or
There's always, yeah. There's these old routes have been around for centuries, way before us. So,
Sure, just now it's on airplanes. Well, thank you for your time, and I'll keep a little note there and see if that story develops and other stories on Narco News. So I really appreciate it, Mr. Conroy.
all right, Ryan, good luck to you, man. Talk to you later.
Have a
All
good
right.
day.